This is the audio edition of Touchstone, produced by Poetry Society of New Hampshire, psnh.org.
Sin, Pursued by Death, by Kelly White, read by Nora Smith. Holly hissed, "When she dies, you must open a window." I was angry. I chose not to know. Mother died in the spring, birches feathering green, book in hand. I sat silent watch by her window. Birds sang, a small breeze nibbled its pages. I slammed down the sash, latched the lock. Bees beat their own song at the window. Nurse's aides turned her body, washed wounds, weeping breasts. Her face twisted. She tried to hide her pain from me. Summer's fog, autumn's smoke. When I wake, it's deep winter. Icicles chime at my window. When it cracks, the gray cat slips outside into twilight, into gray golden dawn and cold stars. Whispered breath crosses my palms, white with cold, white with winter, hands empty and no hint of thaw. I unbow my head, 9 below 0, and step out through that dark, lovely window. It's warmer outside. I rub hands together, and the pines let go. The pines let go their burden of snow.
How Be Dispersed, by Mary Castelli. Interrogate the winds, the stickiness of burrs, the sour bellies of animals, distributors of seeds. Wind muscles through forests, bends saplings toward the ground, strips the leaves, the sweet red ones bearing holes punched by maple leaf cutters, the brazen orange, even the yellows that would stay another week, then caresses silky seed heads free from milkweed pods. Be airborne in drafts, singular and high. Parachutes of seeds drift past squirrel nests to be driven down and tangled in grasses. Be the burdock burrs or devil beggar ticks that snag fur on the flanks of wandering dogs, pant legs of hikers. A small rodent scurries deeper, scratches its haunch against a hemlock, deposits one seed. Be consumed in voracious amounts, round berries on branches, blue against red leaves by bears that must fatten, to be dropped in rich heaps of fertilizer. Be the jewel weed, the touch-me-not. Its plump, ripened pods explode after the lightest of touches, burst into entangled thickets of more jewel weeds and companion poison ivy. Starveling, your silences, stones of fruits buried deep within, are ravenous to be heard.
Outlier, by Shane Morin.
Outlier. I am assembled of molecular Legos, DNA strands and arterial tracks that matchbox cars loop around. My skin cracked as Kimball Street after the Manchester plows tear up snow and ice left by the blizzard of 93. I am childhood filled with absence of fathers and affections. Sound slaps, a generous expression, love a two-bedroom brick prison I escaped at 17. I am musical genes and descendant of Juilliard candidate, grandmother stepped away to birth aunts, uncles, mother, and thus me, hack drummer slash guitarist of a one-man band simply cause gentrification interrupts the balance of chaos and space. I am constellations of ADHD and PhD candidate, decades behind Gen Z's and Alpha's, outlier of Bell's curvature, wise enough to know when to shut up. I am flesh and the infinite of earth and womb, child of addiction and coherence, somehow patched together among
variations
J. Prometheus.
Of The Road Not Taken, by Shane Morin.
Variations of The Road Not Taken. Frost was wrong about roads. Divergence and joy a myth, much like Jesus or Gilgamesh. These roads bemoan blood spilled, the crunch underfoot either asphalt or splintered bone. A stroll by moonlight reveals only shadows of who we were before the yellowing. Soured air, a stench of decay pervades the wood lane before me. There are creeping things below the undergrowth. Eight-legged critters skitter across New Balance shoes meant for inner-city concrete. Ah, Frost, you fool. Had you known the road not taken was bereft with death littered with carrion? But trudge forward I must. The creeping trees have hidden away sunlight. In this grove, moans mold into cold fog.
Out of the Dark, by Catherine Bonet, read by Nora Smith. When you left last week for a conference, the house felt emptier than usual. I can't say why. Even when you're here, I'm sometimes more lonely than when you're gone. I decide to leave before your return. Almost spring when I reopen the Vermont house, eager to light its dark rooms, write words to swallow shadows, conjure a magic salve. I navigate around puddles and potholes, lawn gashed by the plow's maneuvers, front porch planks black with weather and wear, the garden a tangle of decay, shiny with slime. Behind the house, the river rushes with snowmelt and a whole April of rain. Color blooms daily. Neon forsythia shocks first, then that surreal splash of green blanketing every hill and field, so bright it hurts my eyes, so sure of itself I can't quite trust it. But when you called this morning, and I heard the tenderness in your voice, I wanted so much to believe what this new earth was promising us. Spring crawls across Vermont's back. Yesterday the geese returned, and a glint of sunshine danced on the water. Night quivers with peepers' calls, vibrates with the rise and fall of tree frogs' trills. Tell me, who cannot succumb to impossible hope with all this being born?
At the Conference, by Sam Stockwell, read by David Bannock. Self obsolete, says Donna, and her hand swerves with the Sharpie, sandwich in the other. It's been a long meeting. We are finagling jargon with our knives and forks, yellow-fingered from highlighters, choking, wishing we could wind up somewhere less hopeless. Under the sadness, oceans. We watch a sunbather in a pork pie hat chide his partner, then pull his shorts from the crack in his ass. We envy everyone who's not suffocating in air-conditioned lunches. The sales clerk is growing a mustache as slowly as his eyelashes. The store smells like bread and fennel, and a customer revolves around the shelves, lifting glass jars to read the labels. Someone slams down a tiny cup of espresso and shoves away a newspaper. Because we are the combined weight of sorriness and unabashed chiseling, because the young have not yet broken their glacial skin, because we have put our foot down and leapt up again, as though every lie we ever told was crawling up our legs. Clam Guts and Mangosteen by John Wessick.
Clam Guts and Mangosteen. Chainsaw fish ply the muddy Irrawaddy past pink dolphins and drug lords hippos to spawn upstream and die. Deep among the mangosteen trees, the Piso brothers, Mojado and Seco, toss clam guts into a campfire. Flesh splits and sizzles in this furnace of disappointment. The brothers guzzle their gin tonic free now that Anopheles mosquitoes bat their heads against Primus lanterns, oblivious to the cloying scents of kerosene, smoke, and ammonia compounds. Must every poem be its own exorcism? Buzzed on incense and Latin, lizard brains diagram prison sentences and hang philosophers on a frame of space and time, while Aristotelian logic folds furlongs and fortnights over stretcher bars before stapling and sealing with gesso. Meanwhile, the mad scientist plots his escape from Plato's cave. He will either signal aliens from planet Remoulade with the clock radio or reanimate a woolly mammoth using DNA from freeze-dried Sulvaki. Somewhere in the constellation Sagittarius, Saturn forgot her shopping list. Pterodactyl burgers, spinach tartare, and Titan's beloved methane chip cookies left behind like a geosynchronous satellite painting an ocean of webbed toes with floor wax. When asked why she searches under Epsilon Sagittarii, Saturn replies, "That's where the light is. A food chain is only as strong as its weakest link."
Vast by L.J. McGrath. How come it is we may not explore where we live, cursed to only see one corner of the yard? The globe is spinning, just trying to contain its vastness, as vastness fights to contain it in return, while we spin in office chairs or shopping carts or bicycles that can't get you from Rhode Island to Montana anymore. The stars only count the hums they need to be vast and to be contained by vastness, and even that boils down to just humming, the same way Franny is humming on the living room couch and I am spinning on my bicycle on a dead-end road with no shoulder. It all folds in on itself until you can't read the prayer card anymore, even though you don't have to. Your heart beating, "Forgive me, O Christ, for I am a dirty sinner."
Terry Carnan. I could not say exactly how I came to love you. An old can of shaving cream somehow got stuck on while I wasn't watching. The cream billowed out like a cloud, settled in a soft mound, swung over the lip of the cabinet, and slid down the side like a modernistic sculpture, like something a child might do on his own and feel proud. To come upon this form of lather softly heaped, to be surprised by its surreal way of coming into being, some small act it had performed itself, was to be strangely moved, a monument to inner depth, the power of air shaped by nozzles, a silent heap of astonishment awaiting a rough chin, a tender offering so softly rounded as if begging for use. So this love wells up in me and spills out. I feel it in my fingertips, an unexpected overflowing.
We Have Known by Elizabeth Pitts.
We have known. We have known about love for a few years now. We sneak baths with your parents out, and I paint my nails yellow for good luck. In the car, I turn ashamed of crying something so untrue about the black worm in your mouth. A mouth, a flute hole spoon, cutting up and burning, a soot drop moving tongue. I wait beyond your lawn before I call for you, and feel under my sleeve where she walked past and said, "I know you, and I know your other garden name, and I have learned to weave a gleaming snowscape, eaten liver and soft grass, open my eye into a gift shop telescope. And I have learned the rain is different everywhere you go."
Lovely by Eugenie Karabatsis. You claim to hate poetry, and I enjoyed riling you up. Your hands would fling into the air, your voice struggling to reach thoughts, preparing to storm the castle. You'd fixed your dislodged, oversized glasses, like my Nana did, before she threw a roast chicken across the room in exasperation. I think you'd like to be remembered that way. As someone who would have thrown a roast chicken when necessary. As someone who said "fuck you" with impish delight. As someone who said "lovely" as though it was onomatopoeia. Once I saw you walking with your love, sharing a chocolate chip cookie. You leaned in for a quick kiss without losing your stride. I never told you about that moment, but it reminded me of a time before and filled my chest with yes.
Chicken farmer, I still love you. Especially when you release them from the hen house, their first white fluttering like a drift of snow up to the shins of your thick rubber boots. when you take them back at night and close the door with a softness that lets me know you care how well the chickens sleep. They probably dream of you, a lighthouse in their sea of feed. I dream your beak-bitten hands onto my waist. I painted my intentions on this rock. So long ago, the town filed a petition to make my love the status quo. Even though they don't know who you are and don't know who I am, they just love that love has made its presence known. Replace chicken farmer with tree tapper, eighth grade teacher, crossing guard, and you'll see why. Like how you lay your fox traps or collect the mud brown eggs in the morning, love is just something we do. Self-portrait with skeleton arm, after Edvard Munch. I reveal my fear from beneath my sleeve like a cheat's poker hand. To fight it, when I was small, my uncle pulled the moon out of my ear like a cold medallion. A disembodied face on a black screen is a moon. In some prints of the self-portrait, the cracks in the ink are more distinct, a soft, cold snow in the distance, waiting with one arm resting on the ticket window. I don't really want a body anymore. A note from October. I don't really want a ticket either, but have felt invisible and close behind the track of a long black train. The void of ink and the paper it's pressed onto are different structures of the same nothing, which is what art is, I hope. Please walk into our bedroom to catch me staring into space and take from me the cigarette of strange empty dreams. Please return to me my body by placing one hand softly on my upper thigh.
Talking to Keats by Carlene Gadapi, read by David Bannock. When I forgot to be afraid of an inherited muscular dystrophy that will rob me of movement, of blinking, swallowing, and finally of speech, and the BRCA2 genes that may be lurking, of arthritis, of loneliness, of being left broke and broken. It was a lovely stretch of time, a settled quiet. An involuntary smile came to my face. I think it was a Tuesday. Certainly not more often. In daylight hours, I am more rational. There's no reason to fear. There's no evidence of problems. But come nightfall, come 3 o'clock, I panic palpate my squishy breasts. I practice swallowing, opening my eyes wide and wider, slowing my breathing, and plan advanced directives. I don't want my eyes fixed on imminent death. I don't want my brain to reel with final wishes. Does my family know the passwords? Can they manage without me? Will I bankrupt them while fighting the dark? A rooster crows that he's made it through another night. I have
Two. Lint Drowned Tights by Krista Carroll, read by Nora Smith. There are some times when I think, no wonder, when I leave the room with a rumpled jacket, something trembling on my upper lip, and my lint drowned tights. When I go home, I'll have my grandmother sew the holes in my sweaters shut. I'll go to the hospital, and they'll put new soles on the bottom of my boots. I'll dust. I'll doctor my face. I'll start arguments because I like when his muscles tense. I think it's what they deserve. But sometimes I think, no wonder things have panned out like this. I skip class. I consider a walk, but it's too cold out, and my tights are drowning in the wash. Going Through My Daughter's Purse by Catherine Solomon, read by Nora Smith. It's a nice purse, deep purple. Eggplant, I think. Leather, with maybe a dozen pockets and zippered compartments, inside and out. That made it hard for me to find her car keys when I needed to take them away from her all those times. There's no cash, no wallet, no checkbook. But maybe her daughter, who's only 12, will want the purse one day. There are 3 lipsticks, dark. Maroon, plum, and a deep magenta, one small tube of concealer, her last deposit slip, a metal clamshell full of plastic cards, New Hampshire driver's license, Sutton Free Library, Evans Express Smart Rewards, a debit card, 3 partly used Target gift cards, remaining credit noted in ink, along with some worn paper ones, Social Security, mini birth certificate, and a new one with the name of a mental health practitioner. I'll keep those for now. We might need them. Her daughter needs her mother, but will have to make do with a dad and friends, maybe a special teacher who will recognize her strengths, and me, her grandmother, here for as long as I can be. There are 6 pens, but no notebook, a velvet bag with polished stones, blue, white, black, purple, pink. I can name that one, pink quartz. Another velvet bag, full of only Halloween earrings, spider webs and bats, pumpkins, skeletons and ghosts. How bizarre. It's August now. She died on the first day of June. Maybe she'd been thinking about a picnic. 3 packets of salt, 2 honey straws, 6 plastic spoons, 2 plastic knives, a crumpled bunch of paper napkins, a few band-aids. You know, in case she might trip on a tree root or over a half-buried rock at the shore of Kezar Lake, where the picnic tables wait in the August sun.
This is Marjorie Moorhead recording my poem, Talking to Jorge Again. Talking to Jorge again. After we'd left the city, after you'd disappeared, and I was left to drift alone for years, I may have become addicted to crackers, really just to the act of eating them. Motion of hand to box to mouth, the chewing, swallowing, again and again. Just enough salt, just enough crunch to feel alive. This wasn't the answer, though. Didn't fill the hole of loneliness. Wasn't the satisfaction I was seeking. I needed to sit with spine straight and sink into my breath. Yes, meditation opened the top of my head and let a white light come shining in. Let me sink down past my tailbone into the earth to its core. Letting in sky and connecting with ground, there's no more alienation. I become part of all there is. Over 60 old now, who believed it possible back in those early years of AIDS to make it out, to keep living? That you and so many others couldn't, I'll be forever grieving.
Exhibition by Nicole Acevedo. A professor asks me to draw a picture of the first place I remember living. I get to work meticulously putting my childhood on display, Evergreen Park Apartments, corner of Santa Fe and Glen, barricade in the courtyard, second floor studio overlooking the community pool. Leave out how I almost drowned. My mother sparking a cigarette, gossiping with another resident junkie. Cracked plastic lawn chairs, stale burn of nicotine and chlorine. Catch my breath before explaining the tracks that run parallel to the building. How needle-thin walls rattle as freight trains pass in the night. Include a shaky sketch of Moe's gas station. Keep adding to the bigger picture until there isn't any space left for what I remember. Someone says, I looked up the complex. The tracks really do run right next to it. I press my lips together. The ink moves in and out of focus, through the lines, myself at 3, 4, 5, before the judge made a ruling, flicking roaches off my bottle, my mother using me to garner sympathy from officers searching our bedroom drawers. They show me kindness by pocketing a pipe wrapped in toilet paper, pill bottle stuffed with cotton. I turn away from facing the truth of where I come from, where I am, smile smallly. My voice, the sound of a distant train. The Counselor by Nicole Acevedo. Another summer sitting beneath redwoods, ruining our sneakers in the creek, hiding. At first, it was passing notes between breaks, then your hand under my shirt. You'd find me alone near the stream, camouflaged in shade. Pigtail braids damp on the back of my neck, pulled taut this line we were walking. I thought of the first boy I'd kissed only a few months before, how he shoved his tongue between my lips when I opened too wide. You were gentler,
more experienced, knew better than I did. Fingers coiling like a rattler around my waist, calluses catching on exposed skin, my body buzzing like mosquitoes. You plucked a forget-me-not from the wet ground, placed it behind my ear. You're so mature for your age. Then, your teeth on my neck.
Cassandra was a far cry from Waco, by Courtney Seymour, read by David Bannock. An exiled prophet on a Greyhound bus. The seat next to you empty, the air thick with stifle, the words and view looping through a thick smudge of window, spilling into pileups on the interstate. How many years in this desert, dry throat caught in your mounded hands, stretched across tragic moments collected when no one was looking, hearing nothing but the papery screams pressed in concrete, breath rattling in the night. The antidote to everything is storytelling, the hollow wind filled with wisps and truth, the rhythmic, thumping, calligraphic rubber burning miles and minds with these things they didn't want to heed, wringing venom from vellum, from tar. When breaks hiss in Corpus Christi, bless inky inlets drawing penitence in whirlpools, in perpetuity, from prisons built in secrecy, from skin scaling and falling, from my grace and your eyes. You know, it tears. There's the smoke, and there's the soot, the soothe, unspeakable. Intergenerational Poem of Childhood, by Courtney Seymour, read by David Bannock. Your grandmother's soup, the ladle as it dips and plumbs, a knife that bisects root vegetables, onion skin flaking between fingertips and littering the floor. History is fragrant, but it is grandfather's breath, whiskey glass releasing ice cube cairns, an eye that bisects me. His fingers as they dip and plumb, my mother's skin flaking and littering the floor. My grandmother clipped stacks of coupons, bid her time, pressed luck and graphite to lotto tickets. She did not make soup, but she ladled it in silence, one grandchild's bowl to another.
Densmore, Dinsmore, Dunsmore, Sarah Joyce Wood. One sip for the annuals, another for the grass beside the stone. Hold the jug to the spout, let it drink. Pluck the deadheads, clear the weeds, keep things tidy. This is the work and the love of it. Your grandmother goes to Canada to see a tomb, just so she can get the dates right in her accounts. She takes you to see markers with names that are adjectives, names so unused they sit in your mouth like clay when you try to speak them. Your grandmother runs through history books with a red pen, fixes the spelling. She traces lines of data going back and back and shows you the artifacts in between them. The stitches in cookware, the photos in lace. Touch the handkerchief. You will never meet the woman who made this, but you carry her anyway. You're a child in a cemetery and you're pulling at the grass, coaxing moths into your palm. More fallen petals, more pollen in the air. You feel the beating of paper wings against the softest part of your hand. Get a little older. Fill another jug with water. Carry it with you. Do it again.
Of Butterflies and Herons, by Mona Anderson.
Of Butterflies and Herons, for Henry. I never remember the first butterfly I see each spring. Before I slide through the muck of mud season, they're suddenly here. Swallowtail and fritillary flitting from crabapples, magenta blossoms to purple lilacs and yellow daffodils, the air sweet with possibility. In the midst of this, my grandson arrives, the silken cream of his skin, a new way to see the world, and now all I see are butterflies. This morning, I watched them light on new coreopsis buds, just as they did when we once released dozens for my mother's birthday. A great blue heron suddenly rises up in the field and flies toward me, her legs outstretched, toes pointed like a swimmer gliding through water, her 6-foot wings beating fiercely. She sweeps low and just above me. Does she tip a wing? Then turns back, lands briefly on the tip of the highest pine before disappearing. I've heard that herons bring luck, that butterflies are a blessing. But everything is a blessing in spring. Flowers, butterflies, herons, the child.
Sting by Matt Miller, read by David Bannock. Every morning of our past seems a sun gilding August grass, as once my daughter in her pink dress, in her third summer, leaps toward me from the wooden steps of the wooden deck of the wooden house on a dewy green. But she has not seen the honeybee black and yellow. Has she an allergy? I wonder what a fool parent I am. And the bee flies under her arm as I wait to catch her, so I snatch the bee in my left hand and my child in my right, and let the sting bite my palm and spread its dull fire down my arm. And I pull her laughing to my chest, and I think, I will do this forever, as a bruise black and yellow spreads from my palm. Till one day, it's midwinter, and she calls me from college, her heart a broken buttercup, she tells me of the boy, of his words, of the sting. I cannot catch in my hand, it spreads from her breast, across her flesh, knocks her from a nest of easy breath. And I feel like I'm leaping towards useless. I can only listen, but that is I've heard for the best, and grasping the ebbing light, I am a sky sun dog by black and yellow. The Descent by Matt Miller, read by David Bannock. By now we've all been told, by those who never claim to know, for those who wonder never need to know, but rather who theorize, postulate perhaps, that the birds evolved over eons from the leftover dross of dinosaurs, whatever remained after the Shishulub impactor hit the Yucatan, and the earth drank deep the dim sun of sulfate aerosol haze. A meteor is quick. Evolution drags on forever, relatively speaking. But from the theropods dawned these goldfinches, robins, ruby-throated hummingbirds, woodpeckers, and blue starlings, volant by the mossy garage behind the porch, riddling the feeder that my wife fills with seed every evening to watch them dart and play summer-long songs of calm, broken only by Emily braying at the gray squirrels to get the fuck away. I think this season will all end too soon, relatively speaking. The sun is already long past noon. Ah, doom. What we later might become, it's impossible to say. Neither oracle, augur, nor ornithological Elijah will guess it right. Older now, I've begun to watch the birds, and I think, what a thing. What a full-feathered miracle to be one who might descend into flight. Crows Are One Thing by David Lowry, read by David Bannock. One, she had this air, this way, like a gull, over water, land, you name it. Two, this is my life, she was everywhere, she painted, charming, fresh, breath, fragrant, plein air, not plain, but plein, natural. Three, airborne disease, it'll soon die down, sea air, sure, on the river, same thing. Four, we had to air out the room before we could sell. The realtor insisted on getting a pro, a team, he called it. Not a trace. They don't take writers. They don't want writers. They don't want you to have stuff going on, you know? They had a novelist once. It didn't work out. That's why they prefer losers. They're not looking for a star. 5. He runs every day before sunrise by the air terminal. His wife died there, hit by a bus right out front. The bus was struck from behind and she got beneath, trapped. 6. There's not much air pollution here, not here. Most of it's from China, dust. Air's yellow, yellowish, it hangs. It flows in, it swims. People can't see, let alone breathe. 7. Nothing wrong with a little air. We need air. Want to join? Listen. Just listen. The gulls. There's a mist. The fog is like mist. 8. Yeah, that was her. We got to listen to her live. She sounded nervous. She was on the air live, around the world. It is hard to grasp. 9. I don't like the air. I don't. Do you? Just a crack, yeah. More? I said a crack. It's the clouds. They look like rocks. 10. We'll be asphyxiated. Better open a window. Don't kid yourself. They're cunning. They are. They hide, suddenly vanish. Mosquitoes. They're smart and then come out while one is asleep. They're like fish. Not the bottom of the lake, but the bottom of the room. 11. I can't breathe. I feel winded. Put on the air. There's a thing, or whatever, no air from 3 to 5, to prevent blackouts or brownouts. The sun, we're not living, we're drifting, floating. 12. We need trees, more trees, forest, darkness, a black forest. 13. There are long-standing grievances to be aired. They almost come to blows. It's the salt. Everything is sun-bleached, old, and worn. 15. I stepped out to get some air. You went by train? Give me air. You weren't driving, were you? It's all grass. As the crow flies, man. 15. Air, not hair. Air. There's no air. There is no money.
I'm Jean-Paul Thuet, and this is Crows on a Fence. Out-of-season strawberries, sliced in a bowl, bright against a dark window, hot coffee. My to-do list is a newspaper tumbling in a dirty alley, rolling towards tomorrow. Have you noticed yet the reverence your feet have for the earth? Even under your whole weight, their gentle soles bless the petals of your passing. Have you noticed that even through pavement, the earth still breathes upon its surface as you carry your body over it? How the sea sighs against the shore, or how the soil embraces the rain? I can't say what poetry is, but as the crows rise off the fence, they hang their imprints on the sky. I'm Jean-Paul Thuet. And this is Other Ways to Say Peace. Say war is somewhere else. Say it no longer matters. Say no matter how long it takes, you'll stay. Say the tree has been there as long as anyone can remember. Say you're safe now. Say you'll come back. Say the robins are back. Say you're sorry. Say there is food in the cupboard. Say you disagree. Say you were lost for a long time before. Say that even though you agreed, you've changed your mind. Say it won't happen again. Say that even after all these years, you still wait for the crocuses in spring. Say you'll sit beside me while I wait. Say that the trout lie deep in the lake at this time of year. Say there's a fire in the wood stove and a mug of hot coffee the way you like it. Say mother, or something like mother. Say you're not scared anymore. Say The test results are negative. Say silence. Say music. Say waves. Say, I love you. Say, I no longer love you. Say you still remember the time we jumped off the waterfall and how the light fell across the river through the trees. Say seagulls crying far above the sea where fishing boats haul their nets. Say the finches are playing in the apple tree, happy for suet after the first frost of winter. Say you woke in the night and I was still beside you. Forever is a long time, and you'll love me anyway.
Lamentations of Threatened Bird Song by Amber Rose Crowtree, read by Melissa Sprague. I am the first feather to shift at dawn, the first famished beak to open. I am the hatchlings beneath my body, warmed by the thrum of my heart. I wake the neighborhood, trees and thicket, the grasses and hollows. My dreams exhale the metaphor of tiny, thirsty tongues. I am the landscape where the gloaming rose and left its cloak behind. My voice breathes with multiple colored breasts, robin rust, phoebe speckled, catbird slate, finch yellow, cardinal red, chickadee gray, indigo bunting blue, blue jay sky, cedar waxwing beige, nuthatch dawn, all into song to fluted note. I am the uncontainable, the I must sing or else implode. I've become grand living, a home weaver. I sing in between the packing of moss to mud for a nest, securing its walls with the fibers of deer, raccoon, fox, and human hair. Spare me the loss of another nest, the inevitable move. Spare me another emptied egg where a song is muted. I want to be the hatchling's first aria again, the necessity of being that pure and treetop escape where the quick hours of day are lived, not spent.
Three Garden Triolets with Birds by Kathy Thwing.
Three Garden Triolets with Birds. My neighbor cut the cholla down that filled his front yard corner. Curve-billed thrashers nested in its crown. My neighbor cut the cholla down. No cholla, no song. We did mourn her. My neighbor cut the cholla down that filled his front yard corner. Seasons shred and splinter. I grumble at calendar's deceit. Mourning doves nest in winter. Seasons shred and splinter. Lantanas bloom in December's heat. Seasons shred and splinter. I grumble at calendar's deceit. My nasturtium seedlings all uprooted. The towhees are at play. I clapped my hands. They never scooted. My nasturtium seedlings all uprooted. Let me have flowers, I beg, I pray. My nasturtium seedlings all uprooted. The towhees were at play.
Hot or Not by Susan Birch. Read by Nora Smith. I finally did it. After all these years, I have the hairdo I always wanted. Hot pink moon. I feel as strong as a knight in armor, with a plume flowing out of my helmet. I wear my new do to work, where I get a few wows, but also some cringing. I ignore it. After all, youth is a state of mind. But when the teenage clerk at the gas station snickers at me, nice hair, I can't help but start doubting myself. And when I'm outside pumping gas, I hear another girl say how lame I am, how she's glad I'm not her mom, and God, that would be embarrassing. Turning my hair back and forth, I move my head in the mirror at home, looking at my pink mohawk from every angle. Now I can see what they see. Not a hip, cool person, but a middle-aged lady in mom jeans. Maybe I could have pulled it off 30 years ago, when I was young and out clubbing, but now I just look dumb, the odd one out at the PTA meeting, the freak. I decide it's time to wash my hair and scrub out the gel, to be respectable again, a proper old lady. So I do, and after I brush it out, I start pulling it back into boring, into a braided high bun.
Three Garden Triolets with Birds by Kathy Thwing.
In Another History. Ancestors sink ships in red drink. Sugarcane, the backs of hibiscus petals, crushed clove, cinnamon, boil and drink. Too long tobacco nights, soft cotton days. The too long equator belly and her red flower waist beads. They turn home. Salt fish tongued, spice mouthed, in their own boats, to trace the flora, trade sorrel for fry bread, drink and eat and dance and sleep, and with my ancestors at peace, pain won't birth me at all.
Three Garden Triolets with Birds by Kathy Thwing.
All the dead deer in my life have only lain across warning lines and roadways, the bodies that are just bodies. We are nowhere near these signals, deep in blue foliage, scored by songbirds. Somehow we call this unsettled air quiet. Listen. Two silences. One, the watchful buck, stilled between umbral conifers and lungless youth. The other, tongue of a fawn, red upon wintergreen, so far from the meat it has become. What difference has ever been survivable? The seen and unseen want, it surrounds us, uncontested. All the want I've lost has been for a just body. When we cross ahead at the rusted rail, I may just rest from one parallel to another, an octave waiting for no severance. My legs will furl like a carcass, or a dancer.
Three Garden Triolets with Birds by Kathy Thwing.
This poem, Black Lit, opens with a quote from the novel Invisible Man. Quote, "We mean to do right by you, but you've got to know your place at all times." Invisible Man. Black Lit. An English seminar, I sat facing Ralph Ellison as the sole black, full scholarship, suburban Boston prep school student of broke-butt urban Roxbury, 1970s. On a magnificently dressed campus in a brilliant white classroom, at the syllabus inflection point of over 500 pages? I'd have slit both of my testicles to be invisible.
On Love and Suffering by Nai Lam. If life is a house, death is wallpaper. Love is the hanging collage of photographs, genius stars scattered along skies black, expired by the time you see them. It hurts, you know. Infinity gives birth to time, and we know nothing of it, except that everything in time dies. Sometimes slow, sometimes brutal, sometimes battered against steps and bridges, ravaged by the current of life's unyielding river, to be swallowed back by hungry infinity. The void, the black box of awe, unanswered questions and sentences unfinished. Who wallpapers a house black? Who causes love to hang from death? Who sprinkles my sky with dead celestial bodies? When eternity tires of its games, I hope it gets more clear. Life's house, death's tar black, love's masticated pain, spat like slaughtered stars across infinite dark. What part of this is supposed to make sense? The Sufis lament that love is pain. Buddha sighs, life is suffering. Christ suffers for you, so you can live and suffer for love.
Graffiti by Leonardo Chung. Across the skyscraper's glass skin, neon pixels glow like flickering heartbeats, like stray leaves caught in the city's last exhale, twirling, flooding across a concrete apron, a ballet for no one. Like a lurking dragon's breath, or the souls of gargoyles escaping the underworld, billows of steam rise from the manhole covers outside the corner cafe, watching two silhouettes merge into one blurred conversation of head tilts, hand brushes, a poem and gestures. Across alley walls, names bloom like dreams, declarations from a spray paint can of forgotten voices screaming into color. The sun dips behind the skyline shadows, stretching like the fingers of the ballerina across the city's face, some days a caress, some days a stranglehold. A pigeon pecks at crumbs. A lady feeds it. Both scavenge in the cracks of the sidewalk. The city breathes, inhales, light, exhales, a living thing. A thing pulsing with the lives of every passersby. A cell in the bloodstream, rushing through a nameless body.
Poetry Out Loud by Frederick Lord, read by David Bannock. Cody was Yates at 17. The shock of raven hair falling over the smooth white brow, the large blue dream-drunk eyes, the strong, unshadowed jawline, the lips most would think too full to be a boy's. Damned if we could tell you now what he recited for us then, or if our scrupulous error judge heard an article misplaced. Probably something wistful, a poem more of longing than logic, or even the early Yeats himself. That almost a man up on that stage seemed to know already how the pulse-metered exhalation called a poem is both breath and spirit, both evanescent and eternal, but not how feeling everything too soon, too fast, too intensely, fatally estranges self from soul. By summer's end, once he'd learned this prosody by heart, he acted out that error by his own hand, making no mistake. We realized then that he'd been saying farewell all along, that he'd delivered the last lines of his own chosen elegy over our gray nodding heads to the back of the auditorium, out through the doors and into the street, skipping across the rooftops of the city, up to the daylight hidden stars, all the way to farthest Arendelle and beyond, as if it were a benediction he could give but not receive.
Polio by Paige Coulter, read by Melissa Sprague. First grade in dancing school, my older brother Jack danced only with me, fighting off wannabes, while Miss Godfrey's cane snapped at my clueless patent-leathered feet, not yet claiming an older brother's disdain for a pesty younger sister. He'd soon be shouting, "Get lost," bombarding me with rubber erasers from his desk. And when my mother met me crying after school, I'd never seen her cry. To say my brother was down with infantile paralysis, what could I say? I must have been sorry lying on the Persian rug with my other older brother doing our quarantined homework, Jack trying to breathe in an iron lung at the children's hospital. Youth is self-serving. I made what I could of my own childish self. Jack was an absence without substance for me, a living ghost we were not allowed to visit, let alone say his name aloud. He just wasn't there, like the poof of a dandelion, seeds carried with the wind. But he was there, lying paralyzed, waist down, building model airplanes to zing to another polio victim across the hall. We waited a year for him to come home. I broke my two front teeth on our skating pond that year. Mrs. Damerel, our fourth grade teacher, brought in guava jam for our recess snacks. Jack isn't there in my self-contained, boxed-in year. Yet nothing goes completely away when you are a child. Standing outside his hospital window, waving one day, my mother's tears, how they burned his teddy bear when he came home.
One Band Marches by Lawrence Bridges, read by David Bannock. The Honor Bar's box of nickels survived the downturn's fiercest months, and I celebrated by watching Independence Day parades in a witch's crystal every 6 miles across 20,000 communities. My tolerance for fire trucks and majorettes has been numbed by time. A stadium of Uncle Sam's on stilts seeded my bad dreams of suddenly falling. No steak is more tender than my longing for my missing friend stuck in a hot room without fans. My car is loaded with a gale of propellers from Goodwill. She moved to the mountains for the weekend, so the fans had to sweat alone. Nickels are cumbersome at the supermarket when paying for a separate vegan menu for a minority with minority rights, nickels with the weight of thrift and a budget limited by backache. The rolls weren't glued until someone said it would be cheaper to plug the hole in the roof with them. Cleaner than wood, cheaper than time.
Marlborough Street by Sam Lovett. On this morning early in spring, you and I walk the dogs down rows of brick and brownstones, pausing in the shade of First Magnolias and First Church. The curious ones scrounge around the dependable hydrant with preternatural snouts, alert to every windblown thing, reading mail in subtle delight. Intently, you scan the sidewalk for the debris of occupied four-legged lives. As you stoop to collect, your body becomes to me the geography of care. I wonder at its depth, where you're going, the spot where we might sit and watch the stars carve gracefully across the universe. You call out my name, calling me back to the dog's full rasping, their exuberance, your contrapasso. You drum your finger, and the restless pair falls silent for a moment, agape. Then you dash off, and they lunge behind, bounding after you in the brisk air, heavy with irrepressible budding. And there I go after you, my love, on a leash, loosed, tracking the place where our hope and our heart meet, borne aloft and breathless, bearing the beautiful weight of our world.
Zu früh alt, zu spät klug, by Barbara Bald. Isn't that what the German saying means? Too soon old, too late smart.
I tell you, it's a dirty trick. To recognize the freedom in not knowing, without quibbling over details. To be willing to drift in an open inner tube, even backwards, down a lazy river. To see, no feel, the intense red of a cardinal's wing, the softness of a tabby's coat, succulent juice of a ripe peach dribbling down the chin without need of a napkin. To finally let go into the magic of the heart, despite pieces of it scattered in the wind. It's a dirty trick, I tell you. The end no longer looming in the distance. Up close now, the fall inevitable. We, too soon old, too late smart, live as if tiptoeing on a tightrope over this beautiful gorge.
Black Star by Julia H. Fonte. I am standing in the center of triangled hemlocks, one hosting a giant nest trimmed in milky drips, sign of recent use. Holsteins munch in the meadow near their barn-red home, while a rambling farmhouse, modest in all white, wrapped with a porch and view of the foothills, stands tall at the road, ready to welcome. 100 years ago, I could have been the farmer's wife, picking wildflowers to dry for tea, 3 needled saplings at my feet as I scanned this timeless view. A simpler time, without metal roofs, electric poles, tarred roads. A time without the raven, shunned, exiled from these northeastern hills, who now emerges from a cloud above the cows, who now is shined by the sun like a black star.
3 Garden Triolets with Birds by Kathy Thwing.
Trust. How could I ache so hard for spring and now avert my eyes, avoid the awakening earth's scent, musky and dark, open and new? Close my ears to the snow geese honking their way north under the bright-eyed stars? Other springs have come for the geese and the hungry deer, but not for me. Dare I go now to the ridge where the falcons play the winds, reach for my lover, let my wool coat fall? Will the sun not fail us as we forget the ride of time in love's cocoon?
Spectral by R.H. Russell. Cerulean sky where it shouldn't be shining. Cardinal threads follow, but not from a sacristy. Furred flutter of dun, the outrush of wings. Kaleidoscopic colors outfly their melody. Snow dome reminders mute beyond glass, where that other outside is in for all to see. These birds, this yard, it is what it is, the shot past bright spot, the coal-cloaked dome of a retro but detro gas barbecue, soon destined for some trepont holiday, resurrecting within its lightless hibernaculum an ash-draped, Janus-faced terrapin, slow-haunched, path-dazzled, its mudsled home slouching towards spring terrain, to ascend again from the land of the dead, to rain confetti from a flower bed.
Patrice Pinette. Worry knows that it doesn't know, tying knots upon knots on the same small rope, to secure the what-ifs and what-thens. If only worry could prepare for the worst as a way to ward it off, strike a deal with angel or bedeviled by dread, make a sacrifice to appease the reckless gods. Forgetting the future foretold was no protection, oracle or no, for the tragic hero trying to escape his fate, walked right into it like a king. That was in Greece, a place my worries have never been, but can imagine the sparkling Mediterranean, the innocent sky.
Scent of Tall Fescue, Clover Park, 1999, by C.J. Brady, read by Melissa Sprague. If I ever have a daughter, I will put her in AYSO, American Youth Soccer Organization, which, of course, I played in as a girl. I don't even like soccer. I will put her in AYSO, even for just one night, if she doesn't want to do it again, so that forever after, down all the years, she will know and recognize the smell of the grass at public parks at night, and that smell will remind her that she can run.
Summer Frost by Matt Forrest Essenwine. It was unexpected. Deep, deep in July, all humid, torrid, when blushing brandywines, full and ripe, hang heavy, tearing from their vines, and dragonflies dart between empty rows where sunflowers were to grow. Thank the crows, a killing came. One night, subtle death settled lightly, gently resting life and breath, swiftly, softly, barely touching, leaving rotting brandywines hanging heavy, tearing from their vines, barely clinging, but with such a thing as a summer frost, it should not be unexpected.
Susan Miller, Drinking Buddies in Lunacy. Dreadful drinking buddies, Emily D. and me. We haunt our favorite tavern, the Hummingbird and Bee. On evanescent route to intoxicants of choice, nectar stirred with foxglove dew, we sing in nature's voice. We tipple, too, on sunrise brew, light with lilac wine, sip ecstasies of buttercups on morning glory's vine. A lunacy of light lies in our drinking spree. When I yearn for nature's draught, I turn to Emily.
Fugue, December 1st, by Bill O'Connell, read by David Bannock. 5:50 a.m., 18 degrees. Trees out there, in the dark, revealed in silhouette, and then bone gray. My heart wants to beat, 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 steady drummer. My hearing dims, and these sounds are precious, but so is silence. My dead begin to swell into a small crowd, vying to glimpse what I begin to see. An empty maple, a white pine, spokes to the sky. We prepare for our deaths with shaky hands. Our kisses dry, perfunctory. Is it my lack of passion or yours? Evenings are peaceful, quiet. Did you say something? Say it again. Our love is one, our minds in separate rooms. The tall white pine leans into the skeleton of the maple, grabbing sunlight. Come spring, the maple will leaf out and push back. This 100-plus-year marriage framed by my window, you still sleeping in the other room. Each dawn, I am alive, leaning towards the sun.
My name is Alex Stanley. This poem is titled Winter Landscape with a Bird Trap, after Peter Bruegel the Elder. William Carlos Williams wrote a poem like this, although he missed the point. The point picked up closer with Auden as he tried to explain away the fixations of Bruegel the Elder. And here I come to this painting, approached me in a dream, one where I ice skated with an old professor, though I full well can't ice skate, and I haven't seen that professor in years. It was so scarce a feeling it drove me through my day, and then this painting, with joy always in the background, innocence always in the background, like thoughts placed in the attic of the mind. There is struggle always first, desperation and shortages. It is in the space between the foreground and the background you can see Bruegel, as if behind a curtain, the faint shadow of a smile with arms crossed, understated, waiting for the world to see him, waiting in that dark alley to pull the string.
Three Garden Triolets with Birds by Kathy Thwing.
In this bed where I try to sleep. I'd like to say something about waking with the birds and finding all of one's troubles, including this diagnosis of cancer, wiped away by light and love. 'Twould be nice if the steady aches and odd throbbings vanished. Instead, I let my mind wander off to childhood and a small nagging wish that I had been a better friend to our neighbor's caged pit bull, that I had endured its chain-linked snarls until it would take a treat from my hand and lie near me in the after-school sun when time moved so free and easy.
To Bear Island in Winter by Carla Schwartz. I must have looked like a Sherpa, sweat dripping from my forehead and hunched under a heavy pack, pain ratcheting with each ski step. On our skis, following crusty snowmobile tracks, we trudged across the lake, letting those tracks lead us out of our way until we had to break off and cut our own trail to reach our island. I thought about the phone in my pocket. What would happen should I crash through the ice? And felt more weighed down by the liters of liquids in my backpack, my extra day pack tacked behind. The pain belied just around the bend, but I pushed on while you dragged the sled. When we reached our house, we dropped our load, turned up the heat, and knew we were home. Later, when I spoke to friends about our trip, it sounded so romantic, the two of us plodding across the lake to our island, me carrying dinner, you dragging our composting toilet behind.
You've been listening to the audio edition of Touchstone, produced by the Poetry Society of New Hampshire. You can listen to more episodes of Touchstone Talk, our podcast, and audio editions of past issues, as well as catch up on all of the upcoming poetry events in New Hampshire at psnh.org.